Great insights from two of the Isle of Man's most experienced politicians of the past 40 years. They may be yesterday's men, but a country unprepared to learn from the past is unlikely to prosper in the future. In the second part of tonight's agenda, Joni Farragher and Sarah Maltby talk about the Manx Labour Party and the historic election result in terms of women's representation in the House of Keys. Not quite MHKs yet, but almost. How does it feel?
Oh, well, I mean, it just feels incredible. We've got a strong mandate. There's 10 women elected to our parliament this time around. It really is. I mean, it's a great feeling, but you also feel that sense of responsibility because people have put their faith in you, and now we've got to earn that faith.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great honour to be elected. It's something we've talked about for a long time doing, and now that we're actually in this position, it just feels amazing. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, but we're ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, so Manx Labour was formed in 1918. Since it was formed, it's been continuously represented in Tynwald right up until David Cretney stepped down from the Legislative Council. So although it's not been, it's just over a year?
Yeah, 18 months.
Yeah, so, yeah. 18 months without it being represented in Tynwald, but now we're back.
We're back. We're bells on.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's good. And of course, One of the most fantastic results over the course of the last 24 hours was 10 women in the House of Keys.
Well, I think it definitely will have a big impact. First of all, it is momentous. It really is an historic occasion. In two constituencies, mm-hmm. for the first time ever, we have elected two female MHKs, and that's a double whammy. Yeah. You know, both Sarah and I are in those constituencies, and that is really, really mm-hmm. historic. It feels like we've been part of Manx history, and that is incredible. But yeah, I mean, 40%, just over 40% of our parliament is now females, and that is a really, really high gender representation number. I think probably the highest across the British Isles. So go Isle of Man.
Absolutely. I mean, especially at the Isle of Man, obviously Manx Labour Party, social history is very important to us. So it feels like we've really made our stamp on it. And I just couldn't be any prouder, really, of the Isle of Man, of the residents of the Isle of Man, for going out and voting on Thursday. Thank you.
The Manx Labour Party, over its long, over 100-year history, has stood up for working people.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, and that's it. That is what drives both Sarah and I. You know, I would not have been standing if it wasn't for the fact that I have got a burning passion to make things better for most people on the Isle of Man, for the ordinary people, for the vast majority of us. You know, we've seen a lot of changes in our way of life, and I think that there is discontent out there, and I think that is reflected in the results this time around.
And how does that disconnect represent itself? I mean, what were the key issues, do you think, that people are most concerned about?
Well, as we've just been talking about, lots of people brought up on the doorstep that they wanted to see more women in our parliament, and I genuinely think that there is a sense of the sadness, but also anger, that we didn't have any females in Comyn over the last administration. And, you know, people did discuss that with me, and it wasn't only women. There were lots of men saying that they wanted to see more females, and absolutely that's been reflected in this report.
We're not just there just to make up the numbers, you know, we're there to really contribute and to really formulate some really good policy. So, yeah, this isn't just a numbers exercise or, you know, like tick the box. We've been elected fairly, we've campaigned fairly, and the results of, as you see, we've 10 new females elected. I don't know whether social media plays a part in it, and as much as more people are at home looking at the phones and taking part and engaging that way, I don't know whether that might encourage more people to get out, especially being a mum myself and Joni, obviously, you know, we're very busy with the children and work, and so quite often you just sort of sit down of an evening and scan through Facebook and all the different media channels that there might be, and you know, you suddenly think, oh, actually I'm quite interested in that sort of sparked a nerve. I'd like to know more about that. So whether that's maybe encouraged more people to get involved, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is an amazing election rate, because 15 women stood and 10 got elected.
Mm. Yeah, compared with the expectation for ministers, which is, as I say, about 40%.
Yeah.
It's a 60% chance if you're a woman, a 40% chance if you were a minister. So
which is a phenomenal swing, really. And I wonder if a lot of that is because when you look at the global situation, women in power have done really, really well over the last few years, and whether people are starting to translate that into, well, you know, maybe we can actually
there are great,
emulate that.
Great examples, particularly of small nations with women leaders who've done a brilliant job. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. On that subject, then, women leaders, are we going to have a woman as the chief minister, a woman in the speaker's chair? How many women do you think we'll have in the Council of Ministers?
Well, it's long overdue having a female chief minister. Long overdue. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see that, but I don't know who's going to put their name forward. Yeah. And we can't kind of preempt that at this point, sadly. But I think that it will be very, very noticeable and will make people very upset if there aren't a number of female ministers. Yeah. And if the vote isn't fairly reflected in our composition of our parliament. Mm-hmm.
And what does need to change? Because, I mean, again, you don't have radical elections like we've just had if there's not a reason for it. So what do you think, assuming this is a desirable thing, how do we get back to a more stable system where people actually start to feel that they can believe in their Keys representatives and believe in the government again?
I think the first thing is that people need to feel like the government are actually understanding what their lives are like. That was a big issue on the doorstep.
Yeah,
Sarah,
absolutely.
The same.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Being relatable. I mean, we spent a lot of time canvassing and talking to people, and it's the most important thing you can do. I think people just related to us because we're just normal people that were going out there and had the same issues that they have.
So I think that is the first thing, that people need to feel like there is a genuine connection between themselves and government. So
I empathise. You know, it's not just doesn't just sound good. You know, it's not for a soundbite. You know, we're saying things because we mean it, and we really do care, and we are compassionate. You know, and I hope that shows.
What are the things that you are hoping to have delivered over the next 5 years?
Well, I mean, the biggest one, I guess, would be. Well, it's between two. One of our big ones as an actual party will be bringing that level of inequality closer, bringing the divide between the top 1% and the people who are living currently in poverty. You know, lifting their quality of life and reducing our inequalities in our society. That's going to be our overarching aim, obviously. Mm-hmm. But one of the big issues specifically, I think, is going to be the climate crisis and how we actually deliver that in a fair manner to everybody.
Obviously, the last government declared the climate crisis and then had 3 consultations. Are you expecting something more than that from the next 5 years, Sarah?
Yeah, I think we've had enough reports and recommendations given to us now, and I'd like to really see some positive changes happening there rather than just continuously talking about it or pushing them back or changing the goalposts all the time. We've got the recommendations, we've got what we need to do. Let's just get on and do it.
And I heard an awful lot of the sitting candidates at the Manx Radio election meetings introducing a note of caution and, well, of course, we've got to be very careful that we're not early adopters and then find we've wasted a lot of money on this or wasted money on that. And yet there are obvious things. I mean, the insulation of homes, there's no question that is a good thing. Would that be?
Yeah, I just want to say, if we wouldn't be early adopters in the slightest bit if we started now, we would be actually fairly late to the game. So there's no question of us being early adopters and losing out because of that. That is just not an issue. We are behind, and we need to actually get ourselves back up to speed. And there's a blueprint for us to do this. Professor Curran, at great expense of the taxpayer, has produced his impact report, and it is a good report. And we need to follow that and use it because it's good and it tells us what we should be doing.
We've got the answers there.
No need for any more consultations.
But that goes with social care as well. Like, we are so behind on so many different things. It would be, you know, the two do go hand in hand with each other. and you know, big issues for us to really to get our teeth into, hopefully.
And, yeah. and many people look at the cost associated with this, particularly yeah. when we talk about social care. But they also that there's a general assumption that addressing climate change is going to cost. People then fail to look at the other side of the equation, that if you don't address yeah. climate change, even you know, ignoring mitigation, you know, the reduction in carbon emissions side of things, ignoring that altogether, but just thinking about adaptation, you know, the Isle of Man needs to adapt to this. This is going to happen. I mean, it yeah. is happening. We've seen with all the flooding events. Yeah. But potentially... this could maybe not be as expensive as people make out, because there are, you know, things you're going to save by not having flooding disasters every other year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of actions that we could take that would bring us revenue. So, and I've said, you know, throughout this, that if we take the reins now mm-hmm. and don't wait for somebody else to come in and get the financial benefit from this, if we actually take control of this now, we can stop talking about cost and we can start talking about revenue, because there is actually revenue to be made. Mm-hmm. And it would probably be cost neutral if you look at, because we are going to have to, there's no doubt about it, we are going to have to put some structural changes in place that will be costly. But on the other side of it, in terms of our energy generation and well, other, lots of other areas, there are co-benefits that will save us a lot of money.
And we just got to keep people informed, make sure yeah. people feel they are coming along with us and we're not leaving
Absolutely.
Anybody behind. I think that's a crucial thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if people feel like they're getting good value for money, then they don't mind so much the cost of things. And, you know, if they know they're going to get a revenue from it, and it's going to feel like they are the money's not being wasted. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems on the Isle of Man, that people feel like so much money is just wasted all the time. So if we keep people informed, bring people along with us, then hopefully that kind of stops and brings back what your earlier question about bringing trust back, the faith yeah. back into the system, because at the moment it has been lost. And you know, sadly we did encounter people who said, well, I'm just not going to vote because what's the point, you know. And I know that happens and it will happen forever, but it's quite disheartening when you stood there and you're thinking, but this could be the change. You know, I'd really like to be able to take you with me. I don't want to leave you behind. And
I always felt it a challenge yeah, when you were on yeah. the doorstep and someone said,
oh,
well,
absolutely.
There's no point in voting.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I always
yeah.
wanted to argue the task yeah, with them. And,
yeah. yeah. Well, I did have a couple of people say, I would never vote. Oh, no, thank you. And I just slide a manifesto in. And just, you never know.
yeah.
But no, that only happened a couple of times. But I just don't understand when people don't want to vote.
You're listening to Joni Farragher and Sarah Maltby.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is reflective of
yeah.
what we were talking about, that people feel that government isn't representative
that's
of them.
That's it, exactly, yeah.
And that is something a wound that we need to
yeah,
heal, basically,
exactly.
in our democracy, so that
yeah.
we can get greater engagement, because some of the turnout rates last night
yeah.
Are not indicative of a healthy democracy.
Mm. And is that also potentially as a result of the way in which we vote? Maybe things have changed dramatically over the course of the last 20 years. I mean, I remember when I first stood in the 2003 election, I didn't have a mobile phone. So I needed
yeah.
a phone so I could ring up Annie to say what time I'd be home. 20 years on, you'd be mad not to have mobile phones and all kinds of apps
yeah.
and communication on social media.
Being accessible is something that we pride ourselves on, really, as a party and as MHKs. You know, we want people to feel like they can just get in touch and, you know,
yeah.
we'll get back to them when we can.
And
yeah.
you can do practically everything online now, apart
yeah.
from vote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a big, yeah.
Yeah, course. Yeah, but I mean... I don't know. I have read quite a few articles about how, mm-hmm. how kind of it does leave it open to hacking and all sorts of
you just need to know,
dangerous.
Don't you?
But maybe digitised. I
yeah.
mean, I think
yeah.
that would be the
yeah.
first step, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That the count would be automatic then.
We wouldn't be
waiting there till 2 a.m.
But think
yeah.
of all the poor counting clerks, all the money that they would be not able to earn. One of the things... One of the interesting points, and it's quite a difficult one, I mean, we've got a gas field out there, which we know about, which government has given a licence for, which a firm is exploring. Quite a lot of the candidates suggested, well, actually, it's going to cost a lot of money for the Isle of Man to become carbon neutral. In the time that it takes for us to become carbon neutral, we're going to have to burn somebody's gas. So why not burn our own, and in doing so, actually significantly, build a significant fund, which could then be used to move us to a carbon neutral future.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that holds water. I think that gas as a transition fuel is 50 years ago. We're not there anymore. I don't think that there is I don't think we are going to be burning that amount of gas in the meantime as a transition fuel. And it lets us off the hook with the changes that we need to make. We need to have that sense of urgency in the changes that we need to make in terms of greening our infrastructure in terms of energy generation. And that's not going to happen if we're exploiting a gas reserve. Fossil fuel extraction is just not the avenue that we need to be pursuing. That's
relying on the ways of the past isn't the way forward.
Yeah.
But how would you respond? I mean, there's quite a strong motorsports fraternity on the Isle of Man. There's certainly a fair move just before the election from, was it the Association of Motorists or Motorsports Clubs or whatever, strongly suggesting that motorists are being threatened by active travel policies and things like this. I mean, whether or not you agree that is the case, how do you actually deal with that quite significant number of people on the island who are concerned that there's an agenda being done to them, which is not an agenda they're comfortable with?
Yeah, so this is part of what we were talking about, really, where everybody needs to be brought along. And that is going to have to be a significant government-led initiative to bring everybody along and to get that information out there, that this isn't about taking away choice. This is about adding choice, actually. Shared space is about adding choice. It's about letting people take the choice that they want to take in terms of travel in a safe way. Yeah. Nobody's saying to you have to get rid of your car. What we are saying, though, is that people who choose to travel in a more sustainable way shouldn't be unsafe because of that.
Yeah. Safety has to take the priority, doesn't it?
40% chance of losing your seat if you become a minister in the next administration. You've both topped the poll. There's a fair to middling argument that would go, actually, the people with the most popular vote should be in positions of power. You barely guess. Well, I mean, there's a £5,000 bonus for becoming a minister, £5,000 a year. But actually, you're going to get a fair amount of money by just sitting on the back benches and scrutinising and throwing a few questions in at Tynwald and Keys. Where's the incentive for anybody to want to actually actively engage and be part of a government?
There isn't one. That is the bottom line, Phil. There is not an incentive at this point, is there? I think that we are going to have to be really, really honest with the people of the Isle of Man, in that we have been left with a mess. A lot of the departments have been left with a legacy that is going to need to get worse before it gets better, essentially. And we need to bring that into the open. We need to talk about that, because how are we ever going to actually address that issue if we just keep on pushing it under the carpet?
Is that legacy a real thing? Is it a perceived thing? This is the question. I think certainly when I was attending the election meetings, there was quite a lot said where I thought, oh, I don't think that's entirely correct. I know it's the perception, but again, Sarah, is that one of the issues that really need to be grappled with? Actually, trying to identify what the public perception might be and where that actually differs from the reality of how departments work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think perception does come into it a lot, really. I think especially from growing up in a home where Manx politics was obviously very important and was talked about a lot, you know it's not a 9-to-5 job. It is a 24/7 job. You don't enter into this world and believe that it's going to be that that it's all cut and ribbons and tea dances. You know, it's not that at all. And that's why people put themselves up, and it is a long slog. So you look at people today and they're all weary-eyed and they look tired, because you really do throw everything into this to be able to represent the constituency that you really do feel so passionately about. So I do think there's a massive perception that, you know, see you every once every 5 years, but it goes back to the open communication, doesn't it, and the talking and being accessible and including more people in discussions, and hopefully that helps. I mean, I'm obviously working in a school as well, so I'm obviously very keen to get out. I mean, we've seen a lot of the different social media things that were trying to encourage us to answer questions and engage with us. And as a party, we've obviously tried to engage with a lot of people over the last, I mean, I've been in the Manx Labour Party 10 years, secretary and chair, and Joni's obviously been there for 8 years, is it?
Six.
So, you know, so we've been actively trying to engage people and get more people talking about Manx politics anyway. So we've kind of already had like a bit of an insight into actually how difficult some of the decisions are that our government does make, and our MHKs. And we've been lobbying and trying to be able to do what we can. So we've already kind of had a bit of a taster of it, and now we're obviously going to have a go at ourselves.
Yeah. Well, we talked earlier in the programme with Tony Brown and Alan Bell about inexperience in Keys. And Alan was sort of suggesting that actually that could be a problem. On the other hand, it could be an advantage, because sometimes... if you are to, in fact, I'll give you an anecdote. I was sat at a dinner on one occasion with a deputy speaker of the Dáil, the Irish Parliament, and I was talking about, I think I'd been elected a few years, and I was desperately keen. I wanted to reform this, and I wanted to sort that out. And I said, yeah, but I need some experience. Before I get some experience, I don't really understand how the thing works. And immediately this fella, quite an ageing fella, sort of pointed at me and said, no, young man, you need to do it now while you don't understand fully how it works, while you are not comfortable with it. Mm. So do you think possibly then this the lack of political experience, the lack of understanding about how the current system works, may actually prove to be an advantage?
I think it's all about balance, isn't it? Yeah, because, you know, a fresh pair of eyes on a problem or an issue is always beneficial, but as is an experienced pair of eyes. And I think it's all about having that balance in there, which this parliament has, which this government has. Yeah, I do think you do need both, though. It's always good to have a fresh perspective. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't have quite as many, maybe, pulls on you as somebody who's been in politics for many, many years. So you're more able to see something, you know, with a lot of perspicacity, see all the layers of it quite clearly, instead of being clouded by, you know, previous decisions that you were a part of in regards to it. So fresh eyes are always good, but yeah, we need the experience too.
And of course, one of the other things that you'll find, well, I imagine you'll find, is that people newly elected want to throw themselves into sorting all kinds of problems out. You do that with alacrity, and the next thing you find is you haven't got time to pursue your own agenda, because you're so busy being engaged with all the various aspects of government or parliament or scrutiny that actually your agenda starts to disappear down your list. And then you get to the election in 5 years' time and think, oh, gosh. So how are you going to avoid doing that, or are you going to even try?
Yeah, well, it's going to have to be on a priority basis. Yeah. You're absolutely... I've been thinking about this as well, Phil, to be honest. We're obviously both aware now that faith has been placed in us based upon what people have read in our manifestos and the conversations that we've had on the doorstep. So those policies and that ethos is popular. You know, the people have said, this is what we want in our parliament. We are going to have to work upon delivering what's in our manifestos, and that's going to have to kind of take priority.
And that's what's so good about being together, really, doing this together, because it's, you know, we can help each other and guide each other as well and support each other, because there's going to be some definite challenges for some of the legislation that we'd like to see changed and policies that we'd like to be brought onto the table. And we've now got that backing of each other there to be able to make these changes, hopefully.
And so far, you are the largest grouping in in the current House of Keys.
And obviously we've got representatives and council as well. Just need LegCo now.
That was the Manx Labour Party's newly elected MHKs Joni Farragher and Sarah Maltby. An exciting prospect ahead with so many new talented politicians for the next 5 years. Let me know if you agree or disagree with anything you heard on the show, and please tell me if you'd like to add anything to your future agenda. That's all from Agenda Tonight. I'm Phil Gorn. Gurumayu. Thanks for listening.